2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn dope into DFS pros.
Alright everybody, it's good to be back after a week off of NASCAR to bring you the Charlotte edition of Taco's Fast 40. As always, we're brought to you by DFSArmy.com. Sign up today using the link in the description to gain access to our premium tools, which include the in-depth cheat sheet and our Domination Station Lineup Optimizer, which is the first NASCAR lineup optimizer in the industry to take dominators into account when optimizing. And that's going to be more important than ever with the 400 laps in this race. So sign up today using promo code TACO to support the podcast. I'm here as always with my co-host Brady. How's it going, man? Glad to get back into gear here at Charlotte.
Yes, it was. I was looking forward to the week off because I didn't run any DFS contests last week. I was looking forward to it. And then about Thursday of last week, I was like, guys, I'm missing this a little. And now I'm jonesing for it. So I'm excited to get back to it.
I'm kind of surprised they didn't have anything for it, considering how they had the Can-Am shootouts or the Budweiser shootouts or whatever you call them.
Yeah, good guess is that maybe it's like we didn't necessarily know the entire field up until like 2 hours before the race or whatever. So
oh yeah,
that's what I figured had something to do with it. But I don't know. It was weird. I thought they would have something too.
Okay, so heading into Charlotte, the biggest race of the year. I don't know about biggest in terms of like popularity, but it's pretty popular. Charlotte's a track that goes way back, but this is the biggest in terms of mileage. It's the Coke 600. They'll be driving 400 laps, 600 miles on a 1.5 mile speedway there in Charlotte. So obviously, strategy is very, very concise at a track like this. Why don't you go and tell them a little bit more about the beast that is Charlotte and how we're going to attack this week?
The beast. It maybe once was a beast, but the beast has been tame recently. Yeah. But it's a pretty standard 1.5 miler. I think it's probably one of the faster, if not the fastest, 1.5 milers on the circuit. 24 degrees in the banks and 5 degrees on the straights. You run anywhere from probably around 28 to 30 second laps. And I should double check that. I could be way off, but I think that's probably where we're at. It's a super, super hard track, especially with this downforce package. And we saw this a lot in the All-Star race. Very hard to pass for the lead. The downforce on the leading car can overpower just about any mechanical grip and any mechanical speed the second place car has. Makes it super, super tough to pass for the lead. Most passes for the lead are going to happen on pit road. And we have even seen in the past where there is no passes for the lead, i.e. this race last year. It's an interesting track. It's a fast track and it's a long race, so lots can happen. But it's going to be interesting this week because if you remember back to Bristol, they put that track bite on the bottom groove at Bristol to try and promote side-by-side racing. Well, they've done that again this week to the high line of Charlotte. So that top line is going to have that track bite in it to try to promote two-lane racing, the bottom line and the top line. And we'll talk about it a little as we move on, but I'm not sure, and I think you agree with me, Taco, how effective that's going to be.
Yeah, with it being a night race, I did hear that they diluted the solution a little to make it a little stronger, but it needs heat in order to work. And the way that's set up with it being a race, it starts at 5 o'clock, is that a third of the way through the race, the track is already cooling down pretty rapidly, and they'll be under the lights by about halfway into this, probably the last segment there. And by then, that it'll pretty much be an absolutely useless strip. No one's going to use it. As you saw here last year, Martin Truex Jr. led 392 laps. It just goes to show you how ridiculously hard it is to pass here. And another thing I've noticed with a lot of the scoring here in the past as far as fantasy goes is that there's a direct correlation between lead laps and fast laps. The top 10 scores of all time since 2013, just the top 10 individual fantasy points scores, have all come from guys starting 11th or better, and all of them pretty much had the exact same thing going on for them. They led over 100 laps, and they all had over 50 fast laps. So this week's just obviously about finding all of the possible dominators. If there's one, two, or three, absolutely have to nail them because they're going to be putting up 100-plus fantasy point scores. And as far as place differential goes, just looking at the top scores of all time, really none of them are outside of the top 20. Most of them all just starting in the top 10. But we do have an interesting case this week with a real heavy hitter in Larson starting in the very back. So it could change things a little bit, but historically it's not something that we've seen happen here. Looking at our stats, only 18% of people starting 30th or worse have put up more than 40 fantasy points, and that's not going to cut it here.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It just comes down to Charlotte being a real it's a car racetrack, you know, car over driver. And once the cars get in their order from best car in the field to worst car in the field, it becomes very hard to improve your position. And like we talked about a second ago, very hard to pass for the lead. So hopefully we can get it right. We still need to see practice to kind of see which cars are fast and what order we need to be putting those cars in. But once we do that, I think we have a good shot at finding some stuff this week.
And one thing I've kind of noticed from just the previous years of racing is that the cars they use for the 1.5-mile racetracks, they tend to be pretty steady. So a lot of people are already going to know who to use coming in. So a lot of the guesswork this week will be guessing who's going to be overlooked and how to treat the chalk, because the chalk is going to be pretty chalky this week.
Yeah, definitely. It could be a great week for a little game theory, too, but we'll talk about that as we go through. But playing with ownership percentages, we talked earlier today, Taco, it's going to be tough this week. There's a lot of weird plays this week, and maybe we'll get into them as we go through the field here.
I just wish that they had practice today. They had the first practice a day early, qualifying early on Thursday. If only they got our final practices in today, we could do a pod with all that information. And obviously, you know, the practice times go into ownership percentages quite a lot. But nonetheless, for those listening to the podcast after practice, what would you recommend them going back and checking? Would you recommend sort of looking at 10 lap times, or would you almost want to fade practice times a little bit, just knowing that people are going to go so heavily off of them? Or are you going to only want the people that show that they're super fast in practice?
I'll probably favor practice times a little more this week, but I think something super important is to watch practice this week, especially with that high line that tests a track bite. They're going to be practicing in the day, and you know it's going to be hot on that racetrack, and it's not really going to represent what the actual track conditions are going to become race time on Sunday. So it's important to look, like, those guys could be running that top line and have a tremendous amount of speed, but as we talked about, that top line's not going to have that speed full stop come Sunday night. So I'm hesitant to answer that question until I see what they do in practice time. But we will update everything on the Slack channel at DFS Army. And my article will come out tomorrow after the Xfinity race sometime, once we have all the information. So this podcast should be a good primer, but definitely check out those resources tomorrow because there is still a lot that we need to research.
Would you look too hard into the Xfinity race?
I will, only to see how hard it is for them to pass, because that's going to be a pretty good indicator. If it's like the All-Star race was and nobody's making passes for the lead, it's going to put a premium on guys starting towards the front. And it also will give a little insight, not much, but a little, to how effective that top line is, because they're going to have a fresh coat on it for the Xfinity race as well.
Awesome. So before we get right into the picks here, I just want to take just a little look at the starting position scoring summary. And it looks like this week's dead zone as far as scoring goes is pretty obvious. Obviously, starting first through fifth, that's where all the major fantasy points have come from. But the 6 to 10 range, again, seems to be just a real dead zone for scoring, with almost twice as many top scorers in fantasy points starting 11th through 15th. Then the 16 to 20 spot dying off again, with the only other good-looking spot seemingly on the board outside the top 5 and 11 through 15 is 21st through 25th. Things should probably hold true to form here outside of, obviously, Larson being the major outlier here.
Larson is kind of a unique case because this is the first year. We saw it a little bit last year, but it's really egregious this year of people not taking qualifying times because of inspection troubles. So having drivers of this caliber starting at the rear of the field like this is kind of unprecedented. So like you said, I think Larson should be considered an outlier, and not put too much weight into that stat you just read with respect to Larson. But I do agree that it's going to hold pretty true everywhere else in the field.
I think the weirdest stat I'm seeing here is that only 30% of the time guys starting in the 6 to 10 spot score more than 40 points. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that is pretty nuts.
Could just be the way things have shaped up, but looking at it this week, there's obviously one guy in particular starting in that range that's quite juicy. But let's just get into it here. Obviously, we'll start off talking about, before we go down the field, let's start with Larson. He'll obviously be championing the sticker layer on the outside, because you know exactly what he's going to do. He's going to use it to drive around the likes of Derek Cope pretty easily. And he's had success here in the past before. It's just you don't really have to think about it much this week. The dude is having the best season of his career. He's been awesome on these 1.5-mile tracks, starting in 39th. Even at 10,100, you pretty much lock him in, and if not all in, maybe just covering the very, very low DNF percentage of about 10 to 15%. So maybe play him 85 to 90%, but it's pretty much all in on Larson, right?
Yeah, I wish I could come up with a reason not to be all in on him, but I just can't. There's just too much potential for him to be in the optimal lineup. And even more so, he's got this red carpet laid out for him to drive around all these other cars. He'll be in the top 10 within 100 laps, I would guess. The one thing he does have going against him this week is he had the 39th selection in terms of pit boxes, and there's some really crappy pit boxes at Charlotte. So he's going to struggle to make any headway on pit road, and at a race where a lot of the passing is going to be done on pit road, he's at a huge disadvantage. But like I said, I think with that kind of that top line being relevant for at least the first 50 to 100 laps, he'll make it up to the top 15, top 10 pretty quick. How much he can go further than that, we'll have to see. Practice will be pretty telling, I think. But even a top 10 is enough for him to be in the optimal. So he's hard to fade, I think.
Yeah, especially given the fact that no one ever pushes 60% owned, no matter what position they're in. And with the DNF rate here being so ridiculously low, like Phoenix level low, and without any real changes in the track to throw that into question, it just seems like yet another, just a reason to play him. Obviously, you want to go for the chalky guys more on the low DNF tracks and fade them at the crazier tracks. So, if you want to fade him in GPP, fine, but I am absolutely not going to do that.
No, I don't think I can think of a reason to do that either.
So on to the pole, Kevin Harvick. He also had the pole this race in the fall, at the 330 lap version of this race. Kind of makes the looking back a little different with this race being much longer than the fall race. We don't usually see that, but last race he ended up with some engine problems. You didn't really get to see him take advantage of the pole, but he's done very, very well here in the past. When he's not screwing up his engine, he has 5 top 2 finishes in the last 8 years. Pretty good. He hasn't really, outside of Atlanta, he hasn't really shown the typical Harvick that we're used to seeing of him just like leading tons and tons of laps here. But if you look at Atlanta and compare it to Charlotte, they both are very, very, very fast. I think they're the two fastest 1.5-mile tracks on the circuit. They have the same banking, so there are a lot of similarities. Are you expecting the Kevin Harvick of Atlanta, or are you expecting, well, the Kevin Harvick of last year at this race?
I'm expecting the Kevin Harvick of Atlanta. I think he'll get the jump at the start of the race. And like I said, it was, unless we see something hugely different than we saw last week at the All-Star race, you're not going to get around Harvick or anybody until the first pit stop. And even then, he's going to have the first pit stall and the best pit stall. So Kevin Harvick's the one to beat this week, I think. He should be able to lead 80 to 100 laps with no problem. And if his track history outside of last fall holds at all, a top five should be just another day for Kevin Harvick. So I'm really high on Harvick this week. I think he's probably the safest play outside of Kyle Larson. And he's a real contender to get up around that triple digit in terms of fantasy points.
Yeah, and like I had mentioned earlier, the correlation between fast laps and lead laps, like, you're not going to have guys randomly pitting and putting up fast laps in the first, like, you know, 50 laps or so. So you'd imagine he's, with that clean air that he's seeing, he's going to put up a huge chunk of lead laps or fast laps to go with his lead laps to begin. And that might lock him down value from there unless he crashes or something.
Yeah, I think he's, like I said, with the DNF being so low, the high probability that he leads a good chunk of laps in the first segment of this race, and his tremendous track history, it's just every box is ticked for Kevin Harvick this week.
Now on to the guy, unfortunately starting on the outside of Harvick here, Kyle Busch, 9,800, so a little bit cheaper than Harvick, not quite the track record here, although I do believe his long-term track record here is actually pretty good, but recently hasn't really cracked the top five. Been knocking on the door, but hasn't really cracked the top five. I don't know how to feel about him, because it seems like every week Kyle Busch is more owned than he ought to be, and he hasn't really... He just hasn't broken through this year, although he's certainly looked like it plenty of times. Been knocking on the door, just, you know, last week or the last race at Kansas, he was right there with Truex. It's just like obviously the best car on the track, along there with Harvick as well. It's just starting second, there's like a very, very small chance that he gets the jump over Harvick, but I just can't imagine using him too much unless you believe he's going to be, you know, that next guy that leads lap after, or leads laps after Harvick's done, or goes to the pit, or gets a pit penalty, or whatever.
Yeah, I have a hard time getting excited about Kyle Busch this week, and that's odd, because usually I'm very much on the Kyle Busch train. Last week at the All-Star race was the first time Kyle Busch has ever won at Charlotte in any event in the Sprint Cup, or the Monster Energy Series. He's dominated here in the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series, but he's never been able to get it done at the top level. So he hasn't looked that good on 1.5 miles so far this year. He hasn't looked bad, but he hasn't looked like the Kyle Busch of old. Doesn't have a real great track history recently, like you said, and starting second is kind of worst case scenario, because, you know, he'll probably stay in the top five for most of the day, but it's going to be hard to get around Harvick. And unless he's got the best car or the second best car, he's not really going to have an opportunity to lead laps and put up the fantasy points we need to get real excited about him. So I'm not real big on Kyle Busch this week. And that's kind of, I know it's against the norm for what I usually say, but I'm happy to kind of go under on Kyle Busch.
That's the exact same way I'm feeling about the next guy on the board, Chase Elliott, at 9,300. Sort of seems like the same kind of play here. Like, you wish these guys had the pull, and these are guys usually do want to play week to week. I mean, Elliott's always been great at these 1.5-mile tracks. It's just really hard to see them passing Harvick outside of some circumstances coming up, and both of these guys have a couple of 1.5-mile monsters in Martin Truex Jr., and even Blaney and Jones they might have to worry about just right behind them, and it really dampers expectations from them. How do you feel about Chase? Chase led a ton of laps this race last year. Really kind of broke out there, but he was leading laps earlier in the year. Just, he hasn't been doing that any time recently. Like, he's just kind of been just chilling in, like, ninth place every race, not doing much, or crashing into people in the pits.
Yeah. Not real excited about Chase Elliott either, for a couple of reasons. His 1.5-mile stats have actually been serviceable this year, though his lead laps at 1.5 miles have been pretty atrocious.
His track can't get any worse than that.
Yeah, that's right. Zero. His track history here is pretty negligible. A 33rd, an 8th, and an 18th.
Just, well, 33rd, he was leading all those laps, though. It's just he got into trouble.
Off like 115 laps or something that race, didn't he, before finding trouble? He did leave laps, but I think that was a bit of an outlier. And like you said, you've got Jones, Blaney, Truex Jr. all starting right behind him. And by the time Chase Elliott gets in a position to take the lead in this race, I'm guessing Jimmy Johnson's probably going to be up in that area too. And I don't see Chase Elliott, if all things are equal and their cars are the same like they should be, because they're teammates, I don't see Chase Elliott leading over Jimmy Johnson for any extended period of time. So not real excited about Chase Elliott. And I don't think there's a whole lot of risk in fading him, because I think that'll be a popular opinion this week.
Yep, for once, Elliott's not going to go crazy over-owned. Since he's been so quiet recently, people have kind of stopped over-picking him like they did earlier in the season. Just, you can make a lineup or two just in case, but there's no real reason to play him, and it's a shame. And I guess the same can be said about Matt Kenseth. He's a little cheaper at 8,700. Good track record, second right behind Jimmy Johnson last time out here. But just like Elliott and Kyle Busch, you'd usually, you know, he's not even really on their level so far this year. And, you know, starting fourth, there's just no real upside unless something magical happens and he gets the clean air. It's pretty much just like this week. You want that guy leading for whatever reason. They don't even have to be that great, and they could be kind of locked in. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that'd be a reason to sneak in Kenseth or an Elliott just because it's low ownership. But rationally thinking, there's no real reason to believe that Elliott or Kenseth are going to pass like Harvick or Truex.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I like Kenseth a little more than I like Busch and Elliott for a couple reasons. Really good track history here. About the same as Kyle Busch for almost $1,000 less. He's got a second and a seventh last year. The only thing against him is he's been pretty miserable on 1.5 miles. I want to keep an eye on him in practice because, like you said, I do think he will go under-owned, and his price is very low for a Joe Gibbs car with an elite driver in it. If he shows any speed, and if we think he's going to go 10 to 15% owned, I have no problem with bumping that up to 18 to 20% because there is a small percent chance, I think, that the Joe Gibbs car could find some magic And if that's true, I think Kenseth is your most likely candidate to lead some laps out of that stable. But again, that's only from the perspective of this could happen, and if it does, this is what I think. And I don't think that will happen. So I'm okay with a little bit over on Kenseth if you follow that narrative, but I don't know how many people are going to follow that narrative.
Yeah, it's gonna be kind of hard to believe, just because we haven't seen it from Kenseth so far this year.
Yeah, you're kind of playing a whim, and I hate doing that. So
yeah, fastest in first practice and only 7,800 here, starting fifth, is Eric Jones. He's kind of done that a few times this year. It's just like, do you think he's gonna spin out three times again and finish on the lead lap?
I don't.
He just gets into so much trouble every week and just bullshits his way out of it or just crashes.
Yeah.
That's been the one complaint with him. And now the complaint is he's starting fifth, but he's obviously cooking with the sauce a little bit with that car, you know, with Truex, or being in Furniture Row Racing with Truex. I've recently branded him Martin Truex Jr. Any love for Eric Jones? Do you think he can dominate here?
Do I think he can dominate? Probably not. Very small percent chance of him leading any significant laps. I think he could probably lead some laps, but I don't think he'll be in for 100 plus laps led.
But why not? If he slides into first place, like, don't you think Ryan Newman could lead 100 laps here if he just so happens to find first place with good tires?
Yeah, I do. But I think his opportunity to get out front is much less, is much lower than some of the guys starting behind him, especially one guy in particular who's going to have the exact same car as him. So, but that said, I think Eric Jones is a fine play this week, because I do think he, if he has anything like the car that Martin Truex Jr. has brought here in the past, he's going to be a lock for a top five, and that's really all he needs at 7,800 to hit value for us. So I don't mind playing Eric Jones. I don't think there's a good chance of him dominating, but like I said, I do think he's going to run some quick laps. I do think he'll be in the top five for most of the day. And if Eric Jones finds a way to spin out three times at Charlotte, which is one of the most car-friendly tracks and is the most forgiving track to reckless drivers, we'll say, then we'll go on the full fade for the rest of the year. But I don't see that happening. I think Eric Jones is probably a pretty decent play this week, contingent on what we see in practice tomorrow.
It's a pretty good point. Although, get ready to not play him for the rest of the year. one thing I wanted to point out, though, 1.5-mile tracks, he has one fast lap. That's the only thing I'm concerned about him. Like, he always practices fast, but on the season, he just doesn't put up any fast laps, and that's going to be so important here.
Yeah, and a lot of that, again, and I hate to keep harping on this, probably comes down to Martin Truex Jr. is going to have the exact same car, and he's always going to get beat by Martin Truex Jr. So,
can we just skip down to Truex already?
We can run through these next three, but I don't mind playing Eric Jones. I don't mind going overweight on Eric Jones, but don't do it in the context that you think he's going to be a dominator, because I don't think he will be.
Yeah, I can't really. I'm probably not going to play him at all. On to Denny Hamlin here, starting sixth, 9,200. Pretty solid track history here. He's pretty much the, like, Hamlin and Kenseth are basically the same guy to me. They just have different prices week to week.
Yeah. Echo what I said about Kenseth for Hamlin. Little more excited about Kenseth just based on his price, but overall not excited about either of them. The Joe Gibbs program outside of kind of Kyle Busch has been really atrocious on the 1.5 miles. It's gotten better, but not so much to get me excited about playing him. He was fast in first practice. Take that for what it's worth, and we'll keep an eye on him tomorrow. But as it stands right now, I'm not going to spend $9,200 on Denny Hamlin, who has done nothing at all this year.
I might honestly be more like excited straight up for Suarez this week over Hamlin or Kenseth, if that says anything.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And on to Blaney, starting seventh. $9,000. They gave him a hefty price bump after his dominant performance in Kansas, where we saw him yet again put up crazy amounts of lead laps and fast laps, just putting up them dominator points at a 1.5 mile. And at the beginning of the race, he kind of immediately got jumped over by Truex, and we thought he would only lead like 10 laps starting on the pole, and oh, it was a gimmick or whatever. But he fought his way back, the track cooled down, and his car was the car to beat right until the very end. He ended up leading like, what, 120, 130 laps. He's always been absurdly good at 1.5 mile tracks compared to all of the other tracks that, you know, are on the circuit. But the only issue I think with him is that he's a Penske affiliate, and it kind of looks like Penske is struggling right now. So I don't really know what to make of Blaney. I got to show him some respect after the last two races or so. Just starting seventh. I don't know. How are you feeling about Blaney?
I'd be a little higher on him if he was starting a little farther back. But as we talked about at the start of the podcast, he's kind of in that that fantasy dead zone, along with Hamlin and the next guy we're going to completely ignore that stat for. But Blaney has been just awful at Charlotte in his career. Best finish of 14th, supported by a 20th, a 31st, and a 42nd in his four races here. Don't know how much to put into that because his cars are obviously a lot better now. But at a $9,000 price tag, it's really hard for me to get really fired up about him. It's going to be really hard for him to dominate. You know, he dominates when he's in a position to dominate. When he's starting first or second, he'll stay first or second. When he's starting seventh, he'll probably stay around seventh. I don't think he'll progress forward. And that's just been kind of his motto. You know, I start here, I finish here. So if he starts seventh and finish seventh at 9,000, it's not really worth much to us, I don't think.
Yeah, he pretty much embodies the Jamie McMurray strategy.
Yeah.
Just start here and stay here. All right, so finally, on to the guy that we obviously have been wanting to talk about this entire podcast. Priced appropriately at $10,700, Martin Truex Jr., who, if you've been paying attention to NASCAR DFS at all over the last year or two, it's just if you see a 1.5 mile track, you lock in Martin Truex Jr. and you don't think about it, because Furniture Row just always brings it to these tracks. And you saw it last race when he won it at Kansas. His car was obviously just the best. Like, get out of my way, I'm passing you and I'm leading these 100 laps. The only reason he gave up any laps to Blaney was he got beat off of the pits by like a nose a couple of times, with Blaney having the first pit stall. And that was pretty much it. But obviously the dude put up 200 fantasy points. Not exactly 200, but 197 fantasy points, leading 392 laps with 106 fast laps a year ago in this race. We may not see that again, but we might see that exactly again. This has been one of his best tracks of his career, it's one of his favorite tracks, and I'm just so excited to play him this week. And I'm excited by the fact that his price tag is so high and the other options are so kind of tantalizing, with the fan favorites being in not so great positions and having Larson there you have to pay for. I'm kind of excited that Truex is going to not be super chalk like he really ought to be.
Yeah, I don't think I need to go into a bunch of reasons why Martin Truex Jr. is a good play this week, but I will give a couple reasons why you should pause a little. And I'm not saying he's a bad play. He's the first or second best play on the slate. But the two things that worry me even an iota is he came here last year for the Bank of America 500 in the fall when he had all this hype, he dominated, he's going to destroy the field again. He laid a big old egg, didn't even lead a lap, or he led one or two laps, finished 13th. That's not really relevant anymore. Different situations. His cars are better than they were last year. He's been super dominant on 1.5-mile tracks. The only other knock against him I can find is they had trouble in the All-Star race, and I never went back, and I really should have, but I think it was radiator or some sort of engine-related issue at the All-Star race last week, and we didn't get to see him on track at all. I mean, it was within the first couple laps that he was just dead in the water. So those are two things to keep in mind, and keep in mind he's starting eighth. So for him to dominate, he has to find a way to the lead, which is going to be tough if we believe that the track is going to be follow the leader like it has been so far this year. Other than those things, keep those in mind when you're setting your lineups. But for the most part, he's the number one or number two play this week, and I don't see me going anywhere near underweight on Martin Truex this weekend.
Yep, the only reason that I'm not like all in is that he didn't get the pole. Obviously, he's gonna have to navigate around five or six no joke drivers, and somehow some way get around Harvick, be it in the pits or what. But it's hard to see a situation where he doesn't finish like top three when it all comes down to it with a chunk of lead laps.
Yeah,
or fast laps. Not even lead laps. He might not even need to lead. Just if his car, like if he practices fastest and all these things, if he does have the fastest car, again, like he usually does in these 1.5-mile tracks, he's going to have fast laps just kind of because, especially if he finds his way out into the lead. But yeah, the only reason I'm not going too heavy on him is obviously he's in this range that is, you know, we've seen not put up very many points, but I don't know. It's just gotten to the point where at these 1.5-mile tracks, it's like if you even think about fading Truex, he just flicks you off, rides the inside lane like he always does, and just gets around everybody, and you're having a bad day. It's happened a few times so far this season. Maybe it caused a little implicit bias here, but I don't think you need to really overthink this one too much. Play him a good amount. Still can't really justify playing him more than Harvick, though.
Yeah, it'd be hard to. It's very hard to talk yourself out of playing Martin Truex Jr. this week, which usually means play Martin Truex Jr. So that would be my advice.
Yep, pretty much. On to Clint Bowyer starting ninth, 8,500. Can't get excited about that. He's gonna finish third or fourth at best.
Yeah, I don't see him winning this race. It's not a great track for him. Hasn't been real good on 1.5 miles, and starting ninth at 8,500 has to do more than I think he can to hit value. So pretty much ignoring Bowyer this week.
Yep. Brad Keselowski starting 10th at 10,400. I've already identified him as a guy that's going to be under-owned compared to how he usually is. You could argue that he's been the best driver in NASCAR this year, and he's been the second best as far as a driver rating at these 1.5 miles go, with 116 driver rating. Behind Martin Truex, his ridiculous 129 driver rating, but still a good chunk ahead of Kevin Harvick's 109 driver rating. So he's very clearly the second best guy. He's going to go really overlooked. Like Truex and Harvick and Larson are going to be two, three times more owned than him. Do you think Kez could be sneaky? Maybe a little bit safer starting in 10th, but still in that crappy range you don't really want to be in.
Yeah, I think Brad Keselowski's role this week is as a pivot off of Truex or Harvick. It's really hard to fit Kaz in your lineups this week, considering how chalky Harvick, Truex, and Larson are going to be. There's just too many 10,000-plus guys that are in good positions this week. But like I said, I don't think Kaz is necessarily a bad play. He's just not one of the best plays. So I think he does stand to be a pretty good pivot. I really don't want to say too much about Keselowski until we see what Penske does in practice tomorrow, because like you said, they have had some struggles these last couple of weeks. So we'll see what they come out with, but my initial reaction to Keselowski is mostly ignore, if not try to use him as a pivot.
Yeah, like a direct pivot off of Truex.
Exactly.
So if you're fading Truex, Keselowski would be a fantastic guy to pile on in contrary to that. But other than that, doesn't really look like he's in a position. I'd definitely prefer Kez at like a short track or a plate track or something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Jamie McMurray starting 11th, 8,400. Pretty much the same story as every week with Jamie McMurray. Qualified just a little too high to be too interested in. And he's going to finish a little too low to be interested in. He's not going to lead laps or anything like that. So kind of another avoid, especially with him not really being one to get fast lap.
Yeah, I agree. Kind of the same boat as Boyer, really. Just he'll probably have a good run. Just he's not a real great fantasy driver because, like you said, he starts too high and finishes too low. So mostly ignore for McMurray.
A guy I usually ignore, and I'm considering, I'll ask you about him a little bit, but I'm considering Kurt Busch starting in 12th. Very good, solid, and consistent track record here. But you could say that about a lot of the tracks, as he obviously used to be a better driver than he is now. He's a little cheaper than Boyer, starting a little bit farther back than Boyer, but it's pretty much in the same situation. I don't know, like, how do you feel about Stuart Haas overall? Harvick getting the pole, that's not really the most absurd thing I've ever heard, but I don't know if there's really too much to be optimistic about. But last race I did see Kurt Busch kind of hanging in there, doing reasonably well compared to how he had looked earlier in the season. Do you have any take on him one way or the other?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of excited about Kurt Busch this week. I mentioned it in my primer article earlier today. He looked good the last points race, and he looked really good in the All-Star race last week. He didn't lead any laps or anything, but he was a top three guy all night long. I think Stuart Haas has something at these 1.5 milers. I've seen it more in Harvick and in Kurt Busch than I've seen it in Clint Boyer, so that's why I'm a little higher on Kurt Busch. Coupled with the fact that Kurt Busch has a pretty tremendous track history here at Charlotte. So, again, I don't want to say this is a hunch play because there is statistics to back up what I'm thinking, but I think Kurt Busch can compete for a top five, and if he does that at 8,200 starting, 12th, he could hit value for us. So I'm not afraid of plugging Kurt Busch in this week at all.
Only issue I have is that looking back historically, it seems like the optimal lineups have pretty much always gone three or four dominators or guys that can find fast laps and then just punts.
Yeah.
And there, I don't think there's a lot of room for the McMurrays and Kurt Busches of the world if they're not going to get these fast laps. So that's the only concern I have with him. I just know he's going to be incredibly low owned and could be sneaky.
Yeah. And that's, again, that's what we're looking at in all these guys kind of starting in this range, is sneaky under-owned guys that kind of have an inkling to at least provide value and have a small chance of being in the optimal. So if there's anybody that fits that description this week, I think it's Kurt Busch.
How about Ricky Stenhouse Jr. starting right behind him in 13th, 7,500. Not any sort of impressive track history or anything, but overall, he's looked obviously a lot better this season and has done... in the past, he did better at these 1.5-mile tracks. He's been all right this season, putting up about a 80 driver rating, but this is where, outside of Bristol, he does his best work in NASCAR. I've been getting an okay amount of fast laps. Do you think that might be a reason to play him? I know he's starting a little high for Stenhouse usually, but given his team's current form, with him and Bain being kind of up there compared to normal in recent weeks. Stenhouse doesn't look like a complete fade to me like he would most weeks starting 13th.
Yeah, I don't think he's a complete fade, but I don't think there's any reason to go splurge on Stenhouse. I actually like Trevor Bayne a little more than I like Stenhouse this week, and that's just based on lower price, lower starting position, and probably the same, if not lower, ownership. Everything else is pretty much identical with these guys. I don't mind matching the field or even going a tad sliver over on Stenhouse, but I'm not super, super high on him.
I don't know about him being more owned than Bayne because the field loves Trevor Bayne.
Yeah,
it's
right.
The DFS community, for some reason, they love the Bayne train, and they're never getting off.
The only reason I say that is just because of Stenhouse's name being so ubiquitous in the sport right now.
Yeah, he's banging Danica.
Yeah, and this is going to be a big casual weekend because there is a bunch of real big drawing contests this week. So the casuals will probably notice him and plug him in, but like I said, match or maybe just a tad over, but I'll probably at most match the field when it comes to Stenhouse.
Okay, so moving right along here, Jimmy Johnson starting 14th. It's got to be a little bit interesting there. Just yet another one of these $10,000 guys you're going to want to roster. You know he's going to move up. He's the defending champion here. When he's not crashing, which he's done a few times in the past, he's usually putting up a top three finish. I just don't know how to... Is it going to be one of those weeks where he just kind of sneaks into the win like he does? Or is it going to be one of these weeks where he's in the top five, constantly bouncing off of people, and then eventually gets a pit penalty and finishes 20th? Because it seems like he has one of those two types of weeks every week.
Yeah. I agree with that, but I will also present the third option, which is when he bounces around the top five all day, and then with 10 laps to go, takes the lead and wins the race, and doesn't score any Dominator points, but he ruins everything because he won the race.
Isn't in the optimal. Just wins the race.
Yeah, so it makes it confusing. I think Jimmy Johnson's got as good a shot as anyone at winning this race, but I don't think he has as good a shot as Harvick, Truex, and maybe even Keselowski. Of dominating and putting up significant laps led. That's just not Jimmy Johnson's MO anymore. He prefers to ride in the middle of the top 10, and then when it comes down to it, he's got more car left than anybody else in the field, and he wins the race. So with that in mind, I'm not super, super high on Jimmy Johnson, but I do think he'll probably win the race, which is weird to say. So I'm definitely going to be playing Jimmy Johnson, but it's not with the confidence of he's going to dominate this race. Because I don't think he will, but I do think he'll be a contender at the end of the day.
I think I have a little more confidence in him being able to find the lead. Just like Knaus just really is great at finding ways to sneak him in there. Like, that might be... Like, if this week is all about just somehow finding your way in first place, I feel like Jimmy Johnson, like, that's his MO. Like, he doesn't pass for the lead. He just ends up there through some weird... like caution or something.
Yeah,
just like the shot calling in the booth. Sort of the same as Keselowski, but obviously even a better example than that. Like, it seems to be his upside this week.
Yeah, I agree with that, and it just, I guess it'll come down to a matter of timing. You know, does he find the lead, bumble his way there at lap 150, or does he bumble his way there with 20 to go? So it's just a matter of timing, and again, it's a guy that we'll look at in practice. If he's got a super, super fast car, it seems like, then my tone will change. But like you said, it's going to end up being a matter of timing with him.
I do like the fact that he's averaged over 20 fast laps on these mile-and-a-half tracks so far this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty top, especially considering the rest of the Hendrick camp has been pretty silent in that category. I like Jimmy Johnson. It's just going to be hard to fit him in at a huge clip considering all the other 10,000 drivers are in a really good spot.
I just think it's really important to look at fast laps a lot this week when you're looking on the cheat sheet and whatnot. Just like underline it or highlight or something, because when people think Dominator points and they see the number of laps, all they can really think about are fast laps. And while most of the fast laps do go to the leader, the guys leading the race, being able to produce them from like fifth place or whatever is so key, because they're worth twice as much fantasy wise as lead lap. So it's all about finding a leak of some sort, being able to find guys that can squeak in these fast laps. But honestly, sometimes they're just like Landon Castle at the end of the race, or the guy that screwed me out of $5,000, freaking Sam Hornish Jr., just going back to the pits repeatedly, just getting fresh tires and stealing all the fast laps to make me lose. But I don't know, it's just something to think about if you're trying to be a little different than the field as far as strategy goes this week. Moving along to Mrs. Danica Patrick, a little shaken up after her incident with Almirola, and kind of like upset and seemingly scared in like the interview, like scared for her health. But she looked really good in the All-Star race. Starting 18th, though, it's a little high despite having some decent track history, so kind of an ignore, right? And also let me lump Paul Menard starting 16th here. Patrick and Menard starting 15th, 16th, that's pretty much just like you skip over them, right?
Yeah, their stats are kind of eerily similar at this track, and I'm just noticing that now. But yeah, they're both Patrick has 1 foot out the door, I think. I think this is probably her last season. And I think that crash probably had an effect on her. But I'm not alone in that thinking. I've seen articles that kind of echo that. So I don't expect much from Danica Patrick this week or at all for the rest of the season. Paul Menard, I do like playing him at certain tracks, but Charlotte, a fast racetrack where cars are at a premium, Paul Menard never really seems to have a good car. He's just kind of an okay driver in an okay car, getting an okay finish. And an okay finish isn't enough for us this week, especially with him starting 16th. So I'm okay to ignore both of them.
I don't think Menard actually cares about racing. He just likes advertising the Menard's car for his grandpa.
Yeah, I mean,
he's just a good family member.
What a great job. What a good son. Not a fantasy player.
Onto a guy I really do like this week. Very cheap. Ryan Newman at 7,300, starting 17th at a track he is awesome at. Yeah. Are you excited along with me for the Newman play here? Because I love it.
Boy, am I. And I feel like a goose, because every week I'm in my article, I get so excited. Ryan Newman is the value play this week.
And then you kind of come off it a little bit later, like when it comes to the lock.
Yeah, and then I shy away from it a little. And then he is who we thought he was, and he has a great finish. And then the next week, I do the same thing. He's probably been a value pick for me for about 4 weeks in a row, but he's going to be again this week, and I'm not going to waver on that because he's got such a tremendous track history at Charlotte. He's a really, really good driver and has shown up with pretty decent cars at 1.5 miles. Nothing crazy, but at his price point, he's been among the best driver full stop in the $7,000 range so far in 2017, and I think that's probably just doubled. His worst finish here is 15th since 2013. Starting 17th, that's positive place differential, so that's enough to inspire confidence. I'll be playing Ryan Newman quite a bit this weekend.
It's crazy how him and Menard are teammates, sort of like how Danica and Kevin Harvick are teammates. Like, they come out of the same garage, but there's just a night and day difference between them.
Yeah, it's crazy. And like, it comes down to driving style and experience, and Newman's kind of aggressive, hard-to-pass driving style is really complemented by Charlotte, where it's hard to pass anyway. So it's nearly impossible to pass Ryan Newman when it comes to Charlotte. So definitely consider doing some research into Newman this week.
Real fast, let me pull up his lifetime stats at Charlotte, because yeah, this dude has won 9 poles at Charlotte, but he's never won. Ton of second place finishes, but he's never won.
Yeah, he's what we call a hot lap hero. Get down one fast lap, but can never get the job done. But he doesn't need to get the job done at 7,300 starting 17th. He just needs to get in the top 10, and if history holds, he will. So
we said that about Stenhouse quite a lot.
That's true.
On to Stenhouse's teammate. Yeah, that segue. $7,100. We have Trevor Bayne starting 18th. We kind of talked about him a little already. Pretty decent track history and good at the 1.5 mile tracks. And for once, he's not starting like sixth. So $7,100. There are not very many plays in this $7,000, $6,000 range this week. There really just aren't. So Bayne's someone you're probably gonna have to sprinkle in because unfortunately you can't just pick $6,000-$10,000 guys.
Yeah, I'm not real high on Bayne, but again, like you said, there's slim pickings in this range. So he's a guy that's gonna make his way into your lineups one way or the other. So I wouldn't shy away from it. I wouldn't expect Bayne to be a real world beater this weekend, and my tone may change when we see how the Roush Fenway guys do in practice. But like I said, it's just kind of a guy that's going to end up in your lineups one way or the other just based on kind of the war of attrition we're going to have this week. But he has looked good on 1.5 miles, I will say that. So don't shy away from Bayne this week, I guess is the moral.
You know who else is going to find his way into my lineups, whether I want him to or not? It's going to be Dale Earnhardt Jr. starting 19th, which... beginning of the year it seemed great for him, and now it's just like this whole song and dance again. Like, okay, Earnhardt's starting like high 20s, low teens, looks like a great play on paper. What's he gonna do this time? Is he gonna have a vibration? Is he gonna crash? Is he gonna get pit penalties? Is he gonna spin out? What's gonna happen this week? But he has shown all the signs of life that he's shown this year so far. I've been on the 1.5 mile tracks, and he actually averages 15 fast laps, and he can find his way up in the top five. Like, we saw that at Kansas. Trouble finds him. He's just in the same sort of slump that Jimmy Johnson was in last year, except with all of the added crap that goes on with his concussion and retirement and all that, and him kind of driving a little scared.
Yeah, I was happy to ignore Dale Earnhardt Jr. this week until they made him $7,900, and he decided he was going to start 19th. And now, like you said, he's going to find his way into a lot of lineups.
At least do us a favor and qualify last or something. Come on, just make it easy for us.
But I was kind of rejecting the notion that Dale Jr. is off this year, he's driving scared. But the more and more we see him, you know, the more and more it's just like, what's going on with this guy? He's not performing the way he usually does. The only performance he's had that's really excited me at all was at a 1.5 miler on Texas, but Texas tends to be an outlier track for him. He's really good at Texas. He's decent at Charlotte, but he's never been super, super competitive. I don't think he's ever won a race at Charlotte. He's won all-star races, but not points-paying races. There is top 10 upside for Dale Jr., and at 7,900, we don't need much more than that. It just comes down to what do you think his state of mind is. Is he going to, you know, 600 miles is a long way to go for a guy who allegedly kind of has one foot out the door when it comes to racing. So really kind of use your own judgment on that. I don't have a problem with playing Dale Earnhardt Jr. I probably won't go super, super over on him. But I can see the rationale for going over on him, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, they're just begging you to play him. And oftentimes the worst plays that I make week to week in Daily Fantasy is playing someone that I didn't want to play just because the roster kind of forced me to. So I'm hoping that people pile onto him, and I'm actually just going to, as of right now, I'm leaning towards fading him or just not playing very much of him.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same boat, but it's another guy that we're going to really have to keep an eye on in practice tomorrow.
Starting off the 20s range, starting at 20th, Daniel Suarez is someone that we've been avoiding all season long, but he actually looked pretty good at the All-Star race, and looked good in Kansas as well, like, really good. Like, this is the Suarez we've been waiting for all year, so... do we get him while he's cheap in that JGR car, or do we proceed with a little caution here? Because I'm starting to get a little excited. I mean, there's not much to get excited off of. We've only seen what we've seen of him so far this year. but he's showing signs of life. Starting 20th is not all that bad, and you know, slim pickings in this range. What do you think about Suarez?
Yeah, if there's a week to play Suarez, I think this is it, because this is, as I've said, it's usually a car over driver track. Suarez is going to have a great car, or at least the best car in this $7,000 range with a Joe Gibbs machine, and he's a pretty good driver. So I think if there's a week to play him, it's this week at Charlotte. He can compete for a top 15. He can easily compete for a top 10, and he can probably even sneak into the top 7 if all the dominoes fall in the right place. So I'm going to be playing Suarez this week. I'm going to take the bait if it is bait, and I'm ready to die on that sword if I have to. But I'm pretty excited about Daniel Suarez this week.
You know who's really bait this week? Michael McDowell at 4,900. But starting 21st, that is some ultimate bait. People see him and be like, wasn't that dude like 6,000? Hell yeah, I'm going to play him. Yep. And the problem is that he can actually kind of hang a little bit at these tracks. That's what concerns me. And he's so cheap. But starting 21st, like, it just seems a little high for me.
Yeah, I am going to fade Michael McDowell completely for a couple reasons. He's going to go way over-owned because his price is stupid. And two, he can compete. He can hang. But 600 miles is a long way to go. And if you look back at his 600-mile race history, 34th, 30th, 30th, and 42nd, none of those are good enough for him to hit value this week, even at 4,900. For him to be valuable to us, he kind of has to, what, finish in the top 15, kind of? And at a 600-mile race for a team that kind of has C-minus to D-plus equipment, that's a big, big ask. So I'm not real excited about Michael McDowell, even though his price is super, super attractive and unexplainable, really.
Yep, just like Dale, not falling for it. There are other places to go this week. Austin Dillon is 7,600, and he is starting 22nd. He has not been very important this year, like, at all. He hasn't mattered in fantasy. Like, you could have faded Austin Dillon completely this entire year, and it would have not been a bad move in any race so far. But he's doing kind of what he has been doing all season long, starting, well, a little bit lower starting position than usual. Like, 22nd isn't too bad for him, and he has a pretty good track history here. No finish worse than 16th outside of last race where he finished 32nd. Could be an interesting and sneaky play with him not being on anyone's radar so far this year. But I feel like I've said that a few times about Austin Dillon so far this year, and he's just kind of been coasting.
Yeah, Austin Dillon loves letting you down. And one thing that really scares me off of guys in terms of fantasy is a new situation. And Austin Dillon, for one reason or the other, I haven't looked into it enough, switched crew chiefs over the last week. The other guy got canned, and a new guy is in. So
might be a good thing.
It could be a good thing, but it's rarely a good thing right off the bat. There's some growing pains with that. Though I think the new guy was his Xfinity crew chief, or was at least an Xfinity crew chief for RCR. I think it's Jason Alex. I don't want to say that because I don't remember. But anyway, it's a new crew chief. Could be a good thing, but I hate playing people based on could be. So I'm probably going to ignore Austin Dillon for the most part this week until I figure out what's going on with the new crew.
I might be baited into playing him a little more just to get off of Dale Earnhardt Jr., honestly.
Yeah, I don't think – I just dropped a coin. That's what that last sound was. But I don't think that's a bad idea. It's just not some advice I will be following personally. But I don't think Austin Dillon is necessarily a full fade kind of play from a perfect strategy perspective. Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of full fade plays here, and he's not one of them, but he's also probably not someone to push your chips on and yet.
Yeah.
Joey Logano is starting 23rd. He's sort of the alternate to Larson if you want a big place differential guy, and he's in kind of a good range for scoring, that 21 to 25th starting position. The problem is he, I don't know if it's all of Penske, because Keselowski has looked okay, but Logano has not looked right. His car was obviously, like, wrong at Kansas, or Kansas. I keep saying Kansas.
Kansas and Penske.
Because I wanted Kenseth to win or something. Like,
yeah, I kind of agree. And Logano didn't look good at the All-Star race last week. He struggled the whole race, though I think he kind of found his way to the front. I don't remember. But throughout the race, his running position was not impressive.
I was about to say, he was about to get knocked out of qualifying first round and had to run, like, additional laps. Despite them not really wanting to, you know, with the tires and all. But he had to keep putting laps out there in order to put up some sort of formidable qualifying effort, and just barely made it into the top 24. And obviously starts 23rd. Just doesn't look good at all.
Yeah. The one thing I will say about Joey Logano is he's kind of a master of survival. We've talked about that before. So he can find his way into the top 10, even if his car is off, which is enough to at least give him a look this week, especially combined with a 23rd starting spot for an A-plus level equipment. But I'm not as excited as I thought I would be about a Joey Logano starting 23rd. And he's going to be tough to fit in the lineups with this field being so top-heavy.
But do you think he'll steal a little bit of ownership off of Larson as people kind of drop to him to save some money so they can afford all these other guys? Or will they just play them both together?
Yeah, I think he'll probably be inflated just from how this, like I said, how top-heavy this is. He could steal a little ownership of a couple of shares from Larson, but I do think people are going to gloss over him for the 10,000 guys for the most part. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
I'll have to see how things are touted over the week.
Yeah, I'm arguing with myself as I'm talking it out, but I'm not real excited about Joey Logano personally this week.
Yeah, but what about you?
I don't know.
You said you're arguing with yourself. I just wanted to hear your counterpoint. But
I don't know.
We gotta move on. We've hit the hour mark. We're only halfway through this field. Kasey Kahne starting 24th. This is actually one of his better tracks. He led like a crap ton of laps in both of the 2013 races. And like at most tracks, he has much better track history than is representative of his talent level now, with him kind of being on the way out of Hendrix. But 24th is not a bad starting spot. He seems like a safe lock to work his way up into, like, I don't know, like 14th or 15th place and just kind of chill there.
Yeah, I don't think he's a bad play. He's not going to kill you, I don't think, either way. To find his way in the optimal, I think he probably needs around a top 8, top 7 finish at 8,000, which isn't outside the realm of possibility by any means, but it's not something I'm really going to count on. I think your scenario where he kind of finishes in 13, 14, 15 range is more likely. Like I said, you can still cash with that kind of output, so I'm not afraid of playing Kasey Kahne this week. But I just wouldn't count on him being a GPP kind of winner.
He did look pretty good at Kansas, though.
Yeah, I think there's something to Kasey Kahne taking to the low downforce package. But, again, it's small sample size, so it's hard to get super, super into Kasey Kahne this week.
Like, he's been looking pretty good this season, but he wasn't looking nearly as good as he was the second half of last season, where he was pretty much qualifying low and locking in the top 10, like, every single week.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah.
But starting to look a little more like the Kasey Kahne we know and love with the last few weeks of qualifying for him. On to not Eric Almirola, because unfortunately he is out for, what, like 6 to 8 weeks with a fractured spinal column or vertebrae?
Yeah, something. Vertebrae something.
But yeah, he'll be replaced by Regan Smith, who saw last year's kind of a scrub comparable to, like, Brian Scott, but he doesn't drive either. I guess comparable to like a Landon Castle. And he has a pretty good track record here, actually, but he'll be in better equipment than he's ever been in before with the 43 Petty car that has looked pretty good over the last month or so. And obviously, Almirola's always been great at 1.5 miles. That's kind of the intermediate tracks where he does most of his damage. Could be an interesting play, but I think a lot of people will flock to Regan Smith just because of the fresh new face to play with, and maybe they'll miss him from last year or something. I don't know. I just think people are going to play him just because he's kind of there and he's really cheap.
Yeah, I agree. Kind of. Regan Smith, I don't think has been a. I don't think it's fair. His equipment has definitely been scrubby, but I think he's a better driver than a lot of people give him credit for. He's won races before. He's a really good driver. He's just kind of got the bum end of
Well,
the stick when it comes to equipment. He drove the Furniture Row racing car for 4 years before they decided that they were good, and Martin Truex started driving it. But he has won. Before he ran some races for Hendrick for a couple years, and he's kind of the perennial substitute driver. But the nature of that job is his job on Sunday is not to wreck the car. So you can look at that two different ways. Either he's going to ride around in 25th the whole race, keep a clean nose, and get out of there with a clean car and not waste a bunch of money, or he's going to be kind of a survivor like we think Joey Logano will be. And just slowly make his way forward, top 15s, maybe a top 12, but I think probably your best case scenario, probably 18th, 17th, which isn't enough, I think, to hit value. So I'm not as down on Regan Smith as I think you are, but at the same time, it's going to come down to what do you think his job is come Sunday night. Because I think it's probably just take care of the equipment, and where the DNF potential is so low, I don't think there's a lot to be gained from that position. So best case scenario, 18th, 19th, I think, this weekend for him.
I'm not as low as I may have made it sound out to be, only for the reason that if you look underneath Smith in this list and take out Larson, there are absolutely no world beaters. Like, we're about to breeze through the rest of this list because it's literally just the worst drivers on circuit. Larson was the only exception to qualifying, which is pretty good top to bottom this week. Almost feels like sort of a rain out kind of week.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Regan Smith, I'll probably just try to like match the field or something. I have him pegged for about 14% ownership right now. And we'll see if he's, you know, how he's touted across the industry and talked up on Twitter or whatnot, but that's kind of a high estimate, just or high estimation, just given how people like to play with the new shiny toys.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
AJ Allmendinger is starting 26th, 6,700, a little bit cheaper than we're used to seeing him, but he hasn't really, outside of certain races where he's marked up a lot, he's really just kind of been chilling all year long, and he pretty much always underqualifies at these 1.5 mile tracks and ends up kind of being a pragmatic play, just like this week where there aren't too many great value plays to pick from. You kind of just load on to Allmendinger, and then Allmendinger's like, "Hey, I'm not that great at 1.5 miles, people. I'm just gonna chill in 25th all race." But there's just not a whole lot to pick from, and he, on paper, he has a pretty good track history outside of a 37th place finish last year. I do believe that he crashed, but has several top 20 finishes. Just at 6,700, there aren't many options, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to go Allmendinger. I might not play as much of him just because I don't really see the upside here, and maybe move on to Ty Dillon right underneath him. But I don't know. Do you see anything interesting there? Or is it just kind of.
Yeah, I don't see much. I see him as, like you said, kind of riding around in 25th, maybe sneaking into the top 20, but just barely. There's a couple plays, like you said, I like Ty Dillon a little better. I like Trevor Bayne for $200 more, and if I really have to, I don't mind finding that extra money to go up to Newman at $600 more. So it's easy for me to avoid Allmendinger this week, I think.
Yeah, and one thing I usually do say about Allmendinger is he has a nose for fast laps, just absolutely not at 1.5-mile track. So I'd ignore that for sure this week. Moving down one spot to Ty Dillon, he's 6,900. Always seems to outperform expectations, but he has no history to speak of here at this track, which is kind of surprising considering how often he's kind of ended up on tour over the last, or not on tour, what do you call, on the circuit, I guess, the last few years. He has 9 lead lap finishes, which is just incredible for the range that he's in. Like, no one else. Like, Buescher has 5 lead lap finishes, and everyone else is, like, 2 or 3 in the sort of scrub range. As Allmendinger has 5, but Ty Dillon has 9 lead lap finishes, so the dude can hang.
Yeah, Ty Dillon's in an RCR car, so the nature of it is he's got better equipment than he gets credit for. 7,000, like I said, there's some plays there I like a little more. Particularly Ryan Newman for $400 more, but I don't think Ty Dillon's a bad play. He's got an average running position of 20th on 1.5-milers. Starting 27th, that there is enough to not ruin your day. So, and like I said, I've been saying this whole time, car over driver, and I think Ty Dillon's got a better car than a lot of the guys in this range. So I think he has potential to sneak into the top 15. And if he does so, he'll probably make his way into the optimal. So I'm probably going to go a little bit over on Ty Dillon this week.
I think it speaks volumes for his upside potential. When you look at anyone like his price and under, he's the only one outside of Allmendinger at a specialty track that has any stage points. But I think that was just he finished like 9th in one stage or whatever, but still. He's the only guy that can find his way in, like, the top 10 without you being utterly shocked with your jaw on the ground. Moving along to another very underpriced guy. There are a few guys that just got really underpriced for whatever reason. One of them would be David Ragan at only $5,000 this week. He starts 28th, and this is becoming a theme here, but it's another trap, guys. Don't fall for it. He's starting 28th, and he's not been good this season. I know he has a little more name recognition than the other scrubs in this range, for sure, as he used to be a much better driver and much better equipment, but no, pass.
Yeah, I agree.
A guy I do like quite a bit, I'm starting to warm up to him a lot when making lineups, and that's Chris Buescher, starting 29th at 6,300. He's still a little more expensive. Like, I don't know why he's $1,300 more than Ragan or McDowell, but he has a pretty good record on these 1.5-mile tracks so far this year. Starting 29th, he's one of the only guys that's not named Larson in this 30 and under range that I even like this week, but as we pointed out earlier, there's almost like no fantasy scoring that comes from 30th or behind. Yeah, pretty much nothing comes from that range as far as significant fantasy scoring. So you really don't want to play a lot of these guys. But if you do, I think Buescher is going to be pretty overlooked. I think people will be much more inclined to drop down to the $5,000 range to pick a Castle or a Ragan or a McDowell over going with like Buescher.
Yeah, I'm happy to play Buescher this week. I like Buescher. Just based on he's got better equipment than most of the guys in this range, and it showed. He's got the highest driver rating on 1.5 miles in this range, and he's just a good driver. He stays out of trouble for the most part, so I kind of have a pegged for a low 20s finish, which probably...
He did finish 16th last race.
Yeah, and that was in worse equipment than he has now, so there is reason to get invested in Buescher this week, I think.
We can just skip Matt DiBenedetto. I loved his all-star getup, but starting 30th?
Yeah, that's...
Nothing there.
Oh, it, yeah.
Landon Castle is 5,100, and I think he's going to be very popular as a punt because it makes just a lot of sense. In the last few years, he has some pretty good track history here, finishing 19th or 19th last race. 5,100 is just so cheap for him. I don't know why he's dropped so far in recent memory. And he actually had a pretty similar, I think it was last race or the race before, where he was only like 5,200 and also starting in the 30s, and he got up to like 20-22% owned. So I kind of am pegging him for something similar with people wanting to punt to get all of these studs, as that seems to obviously be the move this week. Castle's going to be popular. Do you actually like piling on to him with them, or are you hoping that he crashes again like he did last race?
Yeah, I'm not super excited because, again, it comes back to this being a 600-mile race. It's just so hard on equipment. And if you strip away the 500-milers, his track history here is a 27th, which is good, and then a 39th, a 36th, and a 37th.
Not so hot.
Yeah, I don't trust the guys that don't have, you know, the bet, not the best, but anything less than C-level equipment is enough to give me pause this week. So I'm not super high on Landon Castle, and like you said, I think he's going to go over anyway. So he's a guy that I'm pretty happy to go under on.
Gray Golding, cheapest guy on the board. No, second cheapest guy on the board at 4,600, starting 32nd. No. Yeah. No.
Pass on him.
He has a lead lap finish this year. I think that was at Talladega. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Talladega. I don't know. He ran decent at Kansas, I think. Anyway.
Maybe that was it.
It might have been.
That might have been it. But that's crazy because he hadn't finished a race all year. So that's pretty interesting. Yeah, he crashed at Talladega. Yeah, it was last week.
Yeah, it was weird. But this week, I wouldn't.
Still doesn't matter.
Yeah.
JJ Yaley, he doesn't matter much starting 33rd either, right? I mean, we haven't seen him ball but, what, once this year?
Yeah, he's driving the number 7 car, which probably won't finish the race. So
the 7 car didn't even look good at Talladega. It should have. It looked really bad. He just survived.
Yeah, so skip him.
Yeah. Cole Witt, starting 34th, might get some ownership. People like Cole Witt. I guess if you really want to stretch the numbers here, 4 top 28 finishes in his last 6 races.
Yeah, I don't mind playing Cole Witt. I don't know what the equipment's going to do over 600 miles. And 6,100 is way too high for him, even as good as he's been this year. You can get Chris Buescher for 200 more, so I will not be playing much Cole Witt.
Yeah, there's really no upside in these guys, especially with him not even being cheap. It's 6,100, and there's not much point in playing these Survivor guys because they're going to be down like 5, 6, 10 laps.
Yeah,
and
real upside for them.
With a super low DNF percentage, there's just not a lot of point. You might as well just go all the way to the bottom and pick like Corey LaJoie or something and just super punt.
Yeah.
So Reed Sorensen, kind of the same as JJ Yaley.
All these guys are the same to me. Sorensen, yeah. Opener and Harder all.
No Interesado.
Yeah.
Timmy Hill.
Yeah, I'll probably skip.
That's my analysis. Timmy. Alright, Derek Cope, pretty much the same guy as Timmy Hill. Like, if I was him, I would just drive backwards. Of course. I mean, that's how I always played NASCAR growing up, but that's why I'm not sponsored yet. Jeffrey Earnhardt, same deal. Starting 38th, no. We already talked about Larson, obviously, and that leads me to the last play on the board, which I'm actually okay with. There was another guy that didn't get to qualify. Corey LaJoie, he's 4,800. I don't have a problem with using him to super punt over a guy that could potentially hurt you in McDowell starting 21st. At least LaJoie is starting dead last. And while that hasn't really led to anything at all, and looking at the historical fantasy point scoring output, you don't see anyone that's put up significant points starting like dead last. But I actually looked it up exactly. Guy starting 40th. Average 18 fantasy points, so not too hot, but nonetheless, LaJoy is pretty easily, I don't know if you agree exactly, but he's pretty easily better than the likes of Earnhardt, Cope, Hill, Yaley, Sorensen, and Gaulding. And he should pass all those guys and just be okay to warrant a punt, right?
Yeah, I thought I was going to have to talk you into this, but I guess I'm not going to have to. I don't mind playing Corey LaJoy. The one thing, again, giving me pause is the 600-mile thing. But I think he can outlast those other guys that you just mentioned. And he somehow finished 27th last week at Kansas, or 2 weeks ago at Kansas.
He looked all right.
Yeah, now you got me saying Kansas.
And he's actually raced here before in 2014.
Yeah.
Finished 35th, not too hot. But if he finishes 35th this week, that's honestly probably fine.
Yeah, especially if it means you can get some of those higher, those 10,000 guys in. I don't mind playing Corey LaJoy. I wouldn't go crazy with Corey LaJoy, but I don't think he's an automatic fade like he has been in other weeks so far this year.
Yeah. That'll pretty much wrap it up for us. So tell him about your article that's coming out.
Yeah. This podcast was super long because the race is super long, so that'll be our excuse. We had a lot.
It's an important race.
That's right. 600 miles, 90-minute podcast. Article will come out tomorrow sometime after the Xfinity race. It'll have everything you heard here plus what I've learned over the Saturday. That'll come out sometime probably around 5 or 6 p.m. Eastern. And I will be on the Slack, the DFS Army Slack channel with my good friend Taco talking.
Please hit us up. We're so lonely.
Yeah, that's right. We'll be talking fantasy NASCAR all weekend, fielding questions. I don't like telling you if your lineup's good or not, but I'm happy to answer.
I will.
Yeah, I know you will. I don't like doing it because I don't like being wrong. And I usually am when it comes, oh yeah, don't change this, and then it's wrong. But I do feel confident in kind of scripting races, and that's where my specialty is. So come join us there, and we'll do that together.
And be sure to remind Brady on Sunday afternoon, hey, just send him a message. Hey, Brady, have you thought about getting off of Newman a little? Because don't.
Yeah.
That's the mantra.
I'm sure I'll waver before then, but yeah.
If you get sent to the back or something, then yes.
If you're not a member of the DFS Army, another incentive this week is I think we're doing another DFS Army-only swag contest, which...
Absolutely. I came second last time.
Yeah, who won the last time? Do you remember? I don't remember.
Might have been this guy named Brady. I've heard he's pretty good at the NASCARs.
Oh, going for number two this week, so come join us in that. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy doing that and just talking with everybody on the weekend. So,
we'll let the fans win this time. I promise you guys I'll pick Timmy Hill. So that's one free spot. I will play Timmy Hill in the swag contest this week. You heard it here.
Yeah, but all that stuff coming tomorrow. Get involved and we'll have a lot of fun. Make some money.
All right, so hope you guys come and join us. It should be awesome. And remember to sign up at dfsarmy.com to get a look at our in-depth cheat sheet. We've got all sorts of tools and resources easily compiled for you every week, bringing it to you. You can always come hit us up. I'll try and get back to you guys whenever I can as far as, you know, just any questions you guys might have or whatever. One of us will be there for sure. That'll do it for the Taco's very slow 40 this week. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye, friends.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA. Weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as the secrets to unlocking a new level to your game.